Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com.
Hi, and welcome to the Azure Podcast. My name's Evan Basilik, and I'm here with my esteemed colleague, Kale Teeter. Kale, why don't you go ahead and say hi?
Hi, this is Kale, MCS, app dev with the Azure space.
Yeah, I wonder if they get tired of us introducing that every week. But I'm in support for Windows Azure IaaS. Our colleague Sujit is off and enjoying himself tonight. I think he's down the beach somewhere, I think he said. So we're on our own. We'll see if we get lucky enough to do it again on our own later, right? If he tells us it was good enough. We're here today to talk about Microsoft Azure Mobile Services. Kale, you want to kind of kick us off?
Sure. So we've had this mobile service offering for a while now. And when it originally came out, it was kind of a way to ramp up and get people started on this because people were building a lot of phone apps at that time. Windows 8 was coming out, so there was this interest around building these mobile applications. And for people that weren't quite as in line with the whole building a web service and a data layer and a database and those types of things, if they were just used to building the application that runs on the mobile device, this was kind of a quick way for them to get access to some of the stuff that we offered. And it kind of broke into like three main features. So we have this thing called a mobile service that you build inside of Microsoft Azure. And the way it works is it basically is a wrapper around a bunch of services that are up in Azure. So it's going to spin up some services for you so that you can run a web service. It's going to handle – it has an API for storage. So when you go to interact with this API that's mobile services – you're actually interacting with this layer that makes it easy to work with this data instead of having to write your own.
I was saying, and you do write like almost little scriptlets, right? Right. You're not doing this big project. You do these little chunks of things, right?
Yeah. So you basically spin up a mobile service, as it's called, and it'll go spin the database up for you. But then, like I said, you have this SDK that you can then use to interact with it. That's one way. You can certainly just hit the API or the REST API if you wanted. But in a lot of ways, it's kind of like working with the, if you say like the storage client, the library that we have in our SDK for Azure, similar thing. So it has this concept of like a table and a table client, and you just write data to it. And in the back end, it's actually doing all the work to set that API up for you to do the web service layer and to set up the DB.
Yeah, I remember when I was first playing with this, because I was actually supporting Azure SQL Database at the time, and I thought it was really cool that we're backing it with that, but I didn't really have to care or know about it, right? I didn't have to know my structure. I didn't have to worry about it. It's almost like with what we do with like Entity Framework and the Converse stuff, which I'm guessing is probably under here somewhere, but I have persistent storage without having to care about my design.
Yeah, and the other thing it did is it didn't make you use things like SQL Management Studio to actually look at the data. You could just go into the portal and drill through your mobile service and actually see the tables and see the rows of data up there, and now you can even manipulate it to some extent.
Right. Yeah, and I think I just saw, I get confused sometimes because we see so many launches, but I want to say that I just saw at Build we announced that you could do Azure Active Directory authentication with this.
Yep.
Yeah, which, I mean, that's huge, right? Because now you can authenticate against a copy of your corporate Active Directory if you so chose.
Yeah, definitely. And for people that don't have a proper directory store, when they start building an app and they start thinking about that need, it's nice to have that available.
Yeah, I think I saw an article somewhere where it was an interview with our new CTO CEO, and either he or somebody else in the article was talking about how you see all these sites with where Facebook is just kind of the default login, right? And Windows Azure AD, we're trying to pitch that as for enterprises, but plugging it into all the ancillary services is really, in my opinion, what makes it powerful. Yep. Right? Because then I can actually use it in my app versus, okay, I have to write all this code to authenticate and all that stuff. Now I can just say, hey, I want to authenticate this here, and it's just kind of the plumbing's already done for me at that point.
Yeah, and it's something else that just happened. It's a little bit off topic, but it kind of relates. I was just speaking to one of our guys the other day about there's some new integration for the passwords between on-premise and Azure Active Directory. So if you're using that DirSync tool that we have, a lot of people are now starting to use maybe O365, but they have an on-premise AD. Mm-hmm. Maybe they want to use mobile services, right? And they want to use their corporate credentials. In the past, it wasn't quite that easy to get that. You had to set up ADFS and you had to do these things in order to do that federated login. But there's actually, you can do password sync now through the DirSync tool.
Yeah, it's funny. And I don't know, I think this was before I ran into you. I'm trying to think back when we first met. But, you know, when I first moved down to the Windows team, I had been doing SQL Azure and I moved over to do identity. We actually supported DirSync. And I remember when, you know, we first, I think password sync's been out, I don't know, maybe 6 months-ish, right? We're really starting to get some serious traction now with it. But, you know, I remember sitting around with some of my guys in the ADFS support team or the identity team that supports that stuff. And we said, why? I mean, clearly there's a class of people that will still want ADFS, but we were scratching our heads trying to think, when was the last time we talked to somebody who was running ADFS that wasn't doing it because they were doing O365?
Yep.
And we saw a password sync as, wow, all these people, all this complexity that ADFS brings. I mean, it's powerful, but it's non-trivial to set up with, I think we call it same sign-on, right? Because it's not single sign-on, but same. It all that complexity goes away.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. That's super, super cool to be able to do that.
Yeah, and I guess the other part is now we're supporting a lot of SDKs. I know you mentioned it first. Windows might not have been the first client even for the SDK, but we now support, you know, Android, iOS, HTML, you know, like mentioned REST API too.
Yeah, it was pretty cool, you know, to go out here. I don't even know what, like PhoneGap I've kind of heard of, but Sentia is listed out there. I'm not familiar with that one.
Which one are you supporting?
Sentia.
Sentia, yeah, I'm not sure about that one either.
Yeah, for me, that's kind of cool to see that our platform has gotten to the point that it's not, like, you know, I mean, we're both Microsoft guys kind of to the core, right? We work here, we get paid here. But the end result is sometimes you forget that there's all this other world out there. And actually, it's one of the things I really like about the Azure platform in general is it's much more open to that stuff. And it is really neat to see all these different third-party ones out here, iOS and Android, and even this one that, I mean, I'm a phone dev, so I've done apps, and I know I've never even heard of it. So that's really kind of cool to see that we're expanding that much. I mean, not saying I know everything, but, you know, now we're doing these things that I don't even know what they are.
Yeah.
We're supporting it in kind of one of these mainline services. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and yeah, one other thing that it actually does that's nice about mobile services when you start looking at it is you're able to actually even use things like when you start getting a little more advanced, our service bus. So let's say you had some on-premise web services exposing some line of business data or something like that. Maybe you want to expose that through some sort of mobile service to your staff or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can leverage this. So you can have them, you know, interacting with this thing up in Azure, which is just bouncing back to your on-premise services.
Yeah. No, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's that whole kind of spanning of everything. You know, I think the other thing that struck me about the, you know, when we talk about the SDKs and everything is, and I don't remember the last time I pulled one down. It was a number of months ago, but we actually generate the full package for you. Right. So if you want to pull down the actual project, as part of the, you know, the download, you fill in your mobile services and we'll just ship it down to you and it's just all the REST wrapper. Yep. So you could really go bare metal from the simple scenario, right? And then draw all the way down to this bare metal thing in essence that you're writing the actual REST APIs. You know, and I know, you know, we're talking about auth. I mean, we actually support, you know, we talked about Azure AD being really cool, but we actually support all these other auths as well, right? We can't forget that, right? You know, we do Microsoft accounts, you know, AKA Live ID, AKA, what was it before that? something else, but, you know, names changed over time, but still the same thing. You know, the Google auth, Facebook auth, Twitter auth, I mean, that you just use whatever you want at that point. Don't we also do kind of support, you know, one of your kind of favorite things, the auto-scaling, or, you know?
Yeah, that's something that's relatively new. We're able to do that now based on API calls. So one of the things out of the box you can do is, like, set it up to say, like, once it gets to, like, a 90% level, like, as far as, like, how many the percent of API calls are being called, like, it's just a threshold that you can set up there to basically have it go start spinning up other instances to support that load. So kind of a neat feature that we're able to bring that along.
Well, I think that's – I mean, that's all around the whole thing. If you hit it big, which we all want to do, right, if we're doing this kind of stuff, or if your service gets adopted within your own company, you don't want to have to buy new servers. You just want to scale up.
Yeah.
Right? And it's nice to be able to look at your workload and go from there. And actually, you know, I was looking at some of the pricing for these. You look at we've got a couple of different tiers, right? So we've got the free tier, which is, you know, we give a lot of this stuff at a low level for free. You know, the basic tier at $25 a month, and then the standard tier at $199 a month. What really struck me when I was looking at this is, you know, we talk about the number of API calls a month you can do, you know, 500,000. And the number of active devices is 500. I can't remember if you've ever told me if you've done Windows Phone apps, but I've got one, you know, that I wrote for the Fitbit, and like I have 10,000 total downloads over a year, and I'm kind of excited about that, right? To have 500 active devices with a free service, that's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so you really can do something decent and without significant cost. And then when it actually starts doing something, I mean, you're at a pretty decent scale before you're even out any money at that point, right? Because this even includes the SQL database with it, right? So you don't have to pay for that on top of the mobile services stuff.
Yep. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And, yeah, definitely it's something to help you out as you're, you know, go from a startup up to millionaire status.
We all wish, right? So would we still do the podcast if, you know, one of us struck it really well?
Yeah, probably just for the fun of it.
Yeah, it's like, well, you got to do something right when you're not working. Yeah, I think the other thing that kind of catches my attention with this, right, is, you know, we were talking about all the different platforms and stuff, but you're using the same, I think it's key to kind of reinforce, right, that you're using the same back end for everybody. Right, because it's all REST APIs. So the REST API is relatively platform agnostic. You just wrap it differently. But you're not having to deploy a different back end for every, you know, deployment that you want. You know, if you want to have a Windows Store app and a Windows Phone app and an iOS app all hitting the same back end services, that code and that work you do on the back end is a one-time thing.
Yep.
Right, you don't have to redevelop it for all the different platforms. I think that's really the super, when we talk about cloud services in general, I think that's the thing that really gets my attention every time I think about our new CEO's mantra of, you know, and I'm going to say cloud first, mobile first. I think he says mobile first, cloud first, because I'm a cloud guy, really. But, you know, it is, that's where a lot of power is doing all that stuff in the cloud. So you just have this little thin wrapper on the client, right? And then you can hit all these different devices, all these different platforms, you know, while minimizing your effort on the back end.
Yep. Yeah, lower the bar. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, anything else in particular catch your eye on this stuff?
No, from a mobile sense, I mean, the push notifications is probably, I don't know if we mentioned that, but that's kind of a nice wrapper around that stuff too. And that works across platform as well. So, you know, on your iOS device, you get the little, it's kind of a different way that they receive the, what we call live tile updates or toast notifications. They do it slightly different on the other platforms, but they all have some sense of being able to receive this ping to, you know, drive a counter or show a little flag or something in your application to be able to tell you. So kind of put an abstraction layer around that too so we can support the other devices.
So this is kind of about, you know, the device kind of subscribes to this push notification, and then every so often it pushes out this information.
Yep.
Right. So you're kind of like an SMS is pushed to you versus you going to get your email. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think on the mobile apps, one of the big drivers there is like getting somebody to come back to your app. You know, if your app's stale and you ping them about something, about, hey, well, let me go open that and see what's going on, and it drives the users back into your app. So
yeah, okay, cool. Yeah. What are the big things did you hear about this week?
Yeah, there's a couple things, and we'll put them in the link dump. I threw in here that come up some big news. One of the things was, you know, SQL 2014 just came out. I think it was that April 1st or 2nd?
Yeah, just really, really recent.
Yeah, that came out. And with that, we have this way to interact, and we mentioned this on a past podcast, that blob store. So now we're able to integrate a little tighter with the storage service that's up there in Azure and actually be able to store our database files up there. So we can span across and have the SQL Server engine running on something else and using the storage services back end, maybe, for instance, like IaaS, and using your back end as a storage service.
Yeah, that's actually something on my list that I want to go kind of poke around and take a look at, because, you know, I mean, at first blush, you know, I go, storage is, you know, not as fast as blob storage, and why would I ever want to do this? And then I start thinking about, holy crap, how much time and effort do I spend doing backups on premises, mm-hmm. right? And how many customers have I seen that, you know, they knew they were supposed to run backups, but they either, you know, didn't run their backup, or they forgot to run it, or they forgot to test it, you know, that kind of stuff. And now you're storing your database files in the cloud, where they're in essence a lot more, you don't have to worry about that kind of corruption, right? The physical corruption at that level. So I'm going to play around and understand exactly what we're doing here, but it seems like it's kind of thinking ahead, right?
Yeah, I'm interested to hear, and we should do a little work on it too, just figure out like how is it, because SQL notoriously is very heavy on I/O,
especially
when it gets busy. So I'm questioning, and I would love to hear some experience with how people are using that. So if anybody has anything, you can definitely post to our podcast on the blog.
Yeah, I'll have to reach out to some of my old SQL colleagues and see if any of them have really played with this. Because it sounds like it wouldn't be a good idea, but then I think about it a little more, and it sounds really interesting and promising for certain scenarios. I'd really be curious to kind of see what their mainline scenarios they think are here. But it sounds pretty neat. So,
yeah, and one of the other ones and you had a couple here, but I had this script browser for PowerShell. This is a little bit off the Azure track, but PowerShell is a big part of all our products now. And there's a new piece that's coming out, and I'd draw people to. If you're using the PowerShell integrated script environment that comes, I think, since Windows 7 had it and Windows 8.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Now, it's basically like an IDE, a small, like a lightweight IDE for PowerShell. We've been modifying that over the years, like adding to it. And one of the things we did was we had this help screen that was like a dock pane you could put on the right side in the last iteration. And you could look up commands and stuff instead of having to go out to the internet. But now we're actually putting script samples from TechNet and MSDN in there. So you could go in and say, I'm trying to do this thing with Azure. And it'll show you the stuff right off of the internet that we have, you know, the scripts that have been built to do certain things like storage operations or analytics or any of that stuff. So it's kind of neat how it integrates. Just something cool to look at.
Yeah, I think that's one of those things that it on the surface is like, yeah, big deal. But then when you think about, you know, again, the typical user, right, who is probably not in PowerShell on a general basis. And there's a lot of things in Azure that you can only do with PowerShell because it's not in the UI yet, right? So being able to have this integrated environment to not only do their development with and to get the, you know, the dot browsing and those kind of things in it, but to have the ability to kind of inline do these, you know, kind of without having to leave it, do these searches on other ways to do it, the same thing. I think that's pretty powerful. It'll certainly make people's lives a little bit easier.
Yeah, it's like one of those things I hear the guys when I was out at TechReady, our internal conference, some of the internal staff talking about it, and they're saying, yeah, it's great, but, and we've been building a lot of this into Visual Studio too, where you don't have to leave Visual Studio as much, like NuGet and all these things. And it's like, yeah, well, the thing is, you know, once you leave Visual Studio or once you leave PowerShell and go out to the internet, it's like, well, there's Facebook. Okay, there's 4 hours of my life. So it's just like,
yeah,
like you're walking out into this world. It's like, nope, just stay in here and keep working, you know? Like,
yeah. So I guess I'm not the only person that says, okay, I need to go out to Bing and look this up. And I open up Bing and something gets to my attention. And I close and I went, oh, crap, I completely forgot to look up what I was going out there for.
Yep.
It's like the single worst thing for me on Bing is that little thing on the bottom that shows these hot stories.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I actually need to see if I can turn that off. I'm glad I'm not the only one at that point. We were also talking earlier about this, the analytics platform system. So, you know, Hadoop plus PDW. Right. So PDW actually is, I'm completely not hyperbole. I was talking to one of the PDW support engineers downstairs, and we were talking about some of the big installations they see. And, you know, talking about you put, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 SQL Server instances all on this one big rack of machines, and you parallelize your stuff across these instances, and you have the parallelized storage. And you know, now to layer the Hadoop on top of it, now you have big data crunching on top of big data storage and parsing, and wow, I don't really know the real world scenarios for that, but it seems like that for somebody who is in that big data world, that seems like you can't go wrong combining those two independently powerful things.
Yeah, totally. I'm excited to see what that's all about. See how this Hadoop integrates with you know, the data warehousing aspects we've been building in SQL Server. So
yeah, yep, definitely. Definitely. And then I think the other thing that we've got out there is, you know, we talked about this, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago. We talked about the Internet of Things, and that was when we had Ryan on with us, right?
Yep.
Yeah. You know, you and I were talking about this earlier, where this kind of sounds like some of the things that we saw at Build, right, where we're enabling the Internet of Things scenarios and putting some wrappers around it, make it easier to do. I will be completely honest, I don't have a good handle on this, but when I read about it and see it, it sounds like there's some real power there. I'd love to go play with it at some point.
Yeah, it looks like it's joining a lot of the technologies we have over there, not just Azure, but also some of the BI stuff, the HD Insight.
Yeah.
All these different things that work with these, you know, Internet of Things kind of mantra. And, so it's exciting. And it's in like super early preview. I know there's like if anybody's familiar with the Connect stuff that we have, where we, basically you can submit in why it would be important for you to see this early, because this is like, I don't know if it's like alpha, but it seems like pre-beta or something at this point. But
but I think, you know, we're talking about scale earlier, right? Internet of Things is large scale just by default, right? I mean, when you talk about, you know, the things that people are plugging into the Internet of Things these days, you know, outlets and lamps, and the numbers on that just get staggering really, really quickly. Right.
Yeah.
So all this big data and this BI stuff and everything, really, I don't know how you would ever manage that without those types of solutions.
Yeah. I mean, we should probably do another show on some of the Hadoop and natural language stuff. But
yeah,
when you get down to some of that stuff, it's like even managing it, those technologies have to exist to even query the thing, because it's unstructured data and it's very different from what we're used to doing.
Yeah, I should. Some of the guys that support Hadoop sit right upstairs, almost on top of me. I had a call and a favor with one of them and get them to come one day and kind of talk us through it, because I'm sure they have, you know, they actually are supporting customers doing this, so I'm sure they would have some really good insights into what people are actually doing, you know, above and beyond kind of some of the marketing stuff that, you know, is kind of out there.
Yep.
So, okay. Well, anything else on the top of your head this week?
No, I think that's pretty much it for this week.
Okay. Well, yeah, this was, as always, Cale, it was great to do this. Hopefully Sajid will put his blessing on us without Big Brother here to tell us, make sure we do it right. We will see everybody next week, and I think at that point we'll be back to – oh, I'm sorry. We're still down to two of you guys, because I won't be here next week. Sajid will be back at that point. See you, Cale.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.